Welcome to the Best of Agile and Scrum podcast, hosted by Agile Cockpit, accelerating your organization. My name is Martin, and I'm your host. Today, we're talking to Gil Broza, founder of 3P Vantage and author of several books in Agile, including The Agile Mindset. Gil, thanks for joining us. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I used to be a developer, then manager, architect, discovered Agile in 2000. And was so taken by it, I had to practice with it for on several teams and in various circumstances. And in 2004, I started coaching. And since then, it's coaching, training, facilitating, speaking, writing, and so on. I've been independent for 11 years now. And yeah, life is good.
And written a couple of books along the road.
Yes, there is one just came out. Yes.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. So today we're going to talk about the human side of Agile, which is what your books are focusing on. It's not just the Agile mindset, but it's also like keeping things human, ensuring they even become more human, I guess, in that sense. So to start off with, what is, in your opinion, the mindset that people should have if they want to become more Agile?
Okay, so I define mindset as the combination of values, beliefs, and principles. Your values and beliefs determine what sort of principles you would choose. So when we say that we operate in an agile manner, what we mean is that we apply agile principles. Things such as collaboration, learning, fail fast, defer decisions to the last responsible moment, team empowerment, self-organization, and so on. And so if we want to be more agile, the idea is to apply those principles more, to be more collaborative, to simplify more, blah, blah, blah. And in order to get there, your values and beliefs, meaning what you hold important and what you assume is true, what you take for granted, your operating assumptions, so to speak, have to make that possible. Right, so you can't just take, you know, transparency and collaboration and team consensus and apply them in an environment that is all about, you know, prediction and efficiency and execution and resources. Right, you might try to, and you might get a little bit of traction, but those principles are a lot more practical and a lot more valuable for you if you espouse something like the agile values, right? Adaptation, customer collaboration, and so on. So in order to be more agile, we need to start at the top. And the top is really those North Stars, right? The things that are important to you, you know, kind of made legitimate by your assumptions, your beliefs.
Okay, so and say if you're talking to a person that is an organization and they want to take that step towards more agility, what could that person change about their individual mindset or their individual behavior that makes them take that first step, even when those organizational steps have not been taken, if leadership might not be on board, or if the circumstances, like you said, have not changed yet?
Right. And in most cases, they haven't changed yet. So whether it's yourself or the organization, there is a journey. And the journey has to do with really changing the value system, which takes a while. It is totally possible. And, you know, we have seen plenty of evidence that it is, but it takes a while. So what we know there is that, you know, the first thing that needs to happen is you need to actually be aware of the significance of that. And, you know, Martin, you said, you know, either change mindset or behaviors. You cannot really change behaviors if they disagree with your mindset, because chances are that won't stick, because mindset is stronger. Again, mindset gives rise to behaviors that determines what behaviors are likely or possible. And so you do need to pay attention to both, right? So it's not like you can say, all right, as of tomorrow, I care about adaptation and I care about it big time. And you keep behaving as if you don't. So you can be more adaptive tomorrow, for instance, by seeking feedback, by not planning too far out, things like that. But that has to come from a place of actually trying to be more adaptive. And that has to do with intentionality. So we have to start with awareness of, you know, the mindset component of Agile. Start with an awareness and understanding of your current mindset and why you might resist the change, because, you know, that's a change. You might say you like it and then decide it's not really for you. And then you start changing things, again, both at both the conceptual level and at the behavior level. Now, what I like to suggest, and this was actually more prominent in my new book for, you know, Agile for Non-Software Teams, is, you know, choose something to try it on. You know, I come from tech, you know, I suppose most of your listeners are, you know, predominantly in the tech world, right? So in the tech world, when we bring Agile to teams, we usually try to change over like their entire work. You might have a single team working on a single product. You know, it, the product is theirs. That's all the team does for a while. And so if we want to work in an Agile way, it makes sense to apply that to what the entire team is doing. Whereas if you are working in other contexts, even if you're trying agility on something personal, right? Maybe it's a personal project. Maybe it's something you're trying to learn, whatever it is. Then it will be easier to choose something to try it on, right? So you don't try to be, for instance, you know, adaptive and responsive and let's say transparent with everything just yet if you're not used to that, you're not comfortable with that yet. But try it on one thing, one endeavor with a, you know, meaningful outcome. So that would be a good place to start.
Right. That's the first baby step. Try it out on something small. Don't try to like overhaul your entire, I'd say, life or entire work life for that matter in a single go, because it might even be too disruptive.
Yes. And look, we are recording this 3 months into Corona. We definitely know what disruption looks like now. And we do know that people are really struggling to adapt under the new set of constraints, even though they have to be adaptive because we have no idea what's going on and everything has become difficult and weird. So I believe that having some, taking some, you know, small steps really helps. What I would also recommend is approaching this top down. So when I say top down, I mean, start with, again, the thinking, then look at behaviors. And when it comes to getting work done, which where you need like a process or a workflow or something like that, design it to, you know, to manifest your chosen, you know, new direction, as opposed to what 99% of the world does, which is start backwards, which is, hey, I have this, you know, shiny new framework. Let's apply it and it will make me agile. Okay. So we want to start the other way. Yes.
Exactly. So, and that brings me to the next question, right? So what could organizations do to create the kind of circumstances in which people can change? Because like you said, just, I'm just going to be blunt to say dumping a framework on people is, like you said, is not the best first step, because that's a change on behavior. And it might remind people that things should be different, but it's still not getting there, right? So getting them there. So what could organizations do to change the circumstances in which people are more likely to change and adapt and change their mindset, and then follow by that will be changing behavior?
And so, you know, the answers here are definitely not brand new. They're not rocket science. It's you will find them in most management books. You need a compelling reason. You need a compelling motivation for people to change their ways of working. You need to have safety, because if you don't have safety, you usually have some level of fear. And when you have some level of fear, again, values dominate, especially the values of, I'd like to stay employed. And the values of, I want to take pride in my work and I want to feel accomplishment. I want to feel important. And up until yesterday, I knew how to do all those things. And so you need to make it safe to learn, right? You know, in the Agile community, we like to say, you know, safe to fail, but we're not even at the failing stage yet. We want to be making it safe to learn. In addition, like I said before, you have to have awareness. And part of the necessary awareness is like really where Agile plays. And it's not that the frameworks do not ascribe to the values, they do. But the way most frameworks are presented, you don't see the values. You see shiny diagrams, you see practices, best practices at that, like there's no room for continuous improvement, right? And the assumption is that, you know, that alone will bring along with it the thinking. And No, the thinking is subjective. It is abstract. It is invisible. You actually have to, you know, study it, think about it. You know, you don't need a doctorate in this, but you do need to think about it. I mean, there is so much in the, you know, the Agile value system and the Agile principles that while it's not rocket science, most people don't have reference experiences for it. Let's take an example. The principle of deferring decisions to the last responsible moment. Don't make decisions and commitments prematurely, right? It comes to us from Lean and so on. You see evidence of it in sprint planning, in queue replenishment, in the daily stand-up, but it's implicit. It's not something that people are saying, you know what, we're at a decision point here. Let's take a step back. Should we make the decision now? Can we wait a day, a week, a month? Will that be okay? Will that be worth it? So you need to be cognizant of what's going on. Here's another thing that hardly ever gets press: the matter of cost of change. There's so much talk around the Agile community, the change is by and large free, right? You've made something, you want to change it, sure, put it on the backlog. Yeah, right. Because now you are stuck with something built, there is costs. Hardly anybody talks about this. So I'm not saying, you know, predict the future and get everything right the first time, so your change is in fact effectively nil. That's of course not realistic and not what we're trying to do. But factor this into your conversation. Factor this into your choices. And so when you are facing some decision, implementation, choice of feature, when to deploy something, whatever it is, think about, okay, what are the potential changes we might want to make and which ones are going to kill us? Let's design or plan or deploy with that in mind. You don't see that in the frameworks, even though it's kind of in the background. So we have to be explicit. You have to be explicit and intentional.
Explicit and intentional about change. And like you said before, that North Star, that overarching direction, that needs to be clear for people, because that combined with that burning platform, that reason to change, that should create the circumstances in which people are maybe more willing to change, or in which that change is actually possible.
Right. And look, again, now in 2020, we definitely have burning platforms everywhere, but you don't necessarily have to have something that extreme. You might say, you know, let's say it's times of peace. You can say, look, we have been going on like this. Here are the outcomes we get. Could we benefit from being more responsive, adaptive, whatever? And so it's a, you know, an intentional choice. It's a conversation. The answer might be no. Okay, that's totally legitimate. Or you might say, yeah, you know what? Apparently the market moves faster than we've been catching up. Maybe we should not be planning 2 years out and budgeting accordingly and whatever. Maybe if we had a different cadence, we would get different results. And that's the nice thing about talking this way, because it presents everything as an option. Everything is a choice. You don't have to take something just because everybody else is doing it right now. But no, Agile is a way of working, a way of being in a way that might be better for you, and it might not be, but if you so choose, it's a lot of work getting there. You don't just install it.
Nope, that's I can second that, absolutely. So yeah. That brings me to a question, also building on what you said before. You mentioned resistance for a little bit, and we've both been there. We've both been in part of transformations, met people that were resisting the change. So how would you deal with that kind of resistance? How would you deal, what would you recommend people to do in case they meet somebody that is really, really strong in their resistance against this change?
Well, look, we have to unpack this expression, right? Because resisting change, there's the resisting and then there's the change. Let's look at the change first. How deep is this going? What is this change really about? How will it affect the person's existence, the person's pay, the person's position, sense of importance, sense of accomplishment, whatever it is? Is the change also about behaviors and actions, or is it the change in terms of, again, priorities, strategies, values, all the big things? Now, once we know that, we can look at the matter of resisting. So I like the perspective that, you know, resistance means that you have incomplete information. Now, we always have incomplete information because we're not clairvoyant. But at the same time, there is something going on here, especially when organizations go to Agile, where there is imbalance of information, right? You might have leadership saying, yeah, we should go to Agile because of A, B, C, D. But the people on the floor, they don't know that. And only they get exposed to only some of the reasons, and some of them get kind of whitewashed and so on. And that is not cool. So I'm definitely of the opinion that, you know, this is the place to be a servant leader. You don't become a servant leader only once you become Agile, right? It's not like, okay, from now on, we're going to be serving. Until that point, we're going to tell you what to do. So you want to start serving earlier. And part of the serving is, how can I make it a more safe and less fearful environment for people to operate in? And it, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we in the Agile community, we're big on safety, but we don't use the word fear much. It's a bit extreme. But when you think about it, there's quite a lot of fear going around in terms of, you know, should I speak up? What would happen if I didn't like this? What would happen if I turned out to be not so great at this? Okay. So in a way, it's the opposite of safety, but it's not entirely that. Now, the other thing is simply to be aware of who it is you're talking to. Whoever's doing the resisting is human. And so is the listener. And so is the coach. And so is the executive. And so people will be resisting, air quotes, for different reasons. So you need to know your people enough to understand what's really going on.
I couldn't agree more with that. And what you just said, that was pretty interesting about fear, right? We spend a lot of time in safety, but we, for some reason, we're not addressing fear as much, or sometimes even at all, right? And for me, that ties into your comments about these being people, right? These being you. And in lots of organizations, though, they're resources, and some call them human resources, but they're still being shifted around as much as hardware. And it pains me to say that in some organizations, more thought goes into purchasing new hardware than it goes into firing and hiring people. What would you recommend or say to those organizations that are so focused on shifting people around? How do you bring that human part back into this? Because if you make it more human, it, in my mind, it makes it much more easy to address that fear that might exist within people and within the organization.
Yes. So look, the first thing, of course, is language. It's shocking how few people realize that using the word resource in reference to a human being is, you know, troublesome. By the way, it's kind of funny because, you know, it's very prevalent in English, but it's not prevalent in other languages. The language I grew up with, like if you use that word in reference to a human being, you would sound kind of lame. Whereas in English, it sort of became normal. And when that word is used, it communicates, again, aspects of thinking, right? It communicates that, and what I'm going to say now is a bit, it might sound a little bit extreme, but, you know, think about it. When somebody is a resource, that is equating them with the sum of their technical skills and contribution. Meaning, I can move them around and have them contribute differently someplace else and so on. That also communicates some portions of the speaker's culture, organizational culture for the most part. Usually it's a culture of execution. It's a culture of results. It's a culture of, you know, make Wall Street happy and so on. What is particularly disturbing is that not just that the so-called resource is human, so is the speaker. And the speaker is probably also referred to that way. Right?
So there's a cascading effect there.
There is a cascading effect. So everybody is somebody's resource, which is pretty awful. Now, what's awful about this? Let's put aside for a moment, you know, the fact that it's demeaning, right? And human beings are a lot more than their skills and contribution. But the other matter is, when you are doing knowledge work, when you're doing work that has variability, all the VUCA stuff, right? The unknown, the complexity, blah, blah, blah. You can't automate that, right? You can't extract this out of, you know, just a whole lot of typing. You have this is where our humanity plays. Maybe in 50 years, none of this will apply anymore and, you know, robots will have taken over and we're good. But until then, dealing with, again, the ambiguity, drawing meaning from events and data and this and that is still something that humans do. And it's not just a function of, you know, I have a data science degree. Okay. The other thing in Agile, our unit that turns out deliverables is a team. A team is not a sum of resources. That's not a team. That's a group. Okay. It's a work group. So what you really want to benefit from is the white space, right? The collaboration, the synergy, la, la, la. Resources do not need to collaborate, but humans, when they do, get to some really interesting results. So if you understand that, you know, Agile is really about how human beings collaborate to turn out meaningful work, you know, quickly and with feedback and la, 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 you realize that it's all about humans, okay? It's not about standing up every day and reciting answers to three questions. It's all about how people work with each other. It's how they filter information. It is how they communicate information. It's how they choose among options. It's how they generate options. And in this is a purely human endeavor, okay? So resourcing that, right? Just adding the, you know, the headcount, that is not going to create synergy.
Couldn't agree more. And once you resource that, people are going to start doing math, and it becomes more about like what a person can do rather than what that person actually is, right? So, yeah. and in that sense, changing the language is important. It might, to a lot of people that at least I've spoken to in the past, and I'm sure you can relate to this, mm-hmm. is they're like it's just a word, and we behave differently, but the change of a single word can have a profound impact on people.
Oh, totally. And let's take this on for just a little bit if we're talking about the human side, right? Our theme for this podcast. Sprinting implies running. Velocity implies speed. Not so much what Agile is designed for, but let's put that aside. Ceremony and ritual, right? They're not in the Scrum Guide. How do they become a thing? I mean, I don't know about you, but rituals, I hear bloodletting. In ceremonies, I hear something that the elders told me to attend, and I don't technically care for it much because it's going to be the same boring stuff every time. Okay.
Right.
So, which I really like that, you know, the Scrum Guide, for instance, refers to them as events. Okay. In no other framework do you have ceremonies. You have meetings. Okay. So somehow we've objectified and made rigid, you know, some really good ideas, including the people who execute them. And that, of course, is the ultimate thing, right? The process is used by human beings. So if the process were rigid and human beings are resources, just get machines. If you can get your work done with machines, go for it. If you realize that, unfortunately, you still need to rely on human beings, give them a humane environment.
Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. So back to getting started with Agile, right? So mm-hmm. As a final question, if an organization wants to take that first step, what would be a low-key way to have people take that first step towards a more Agile mindset? Well, taking into account that we want things to remain human, that we want to step away from like the whole resourcing. So what is like this first baby step or this like first step even that organizations should take, in your opinion?
Okay. So it's basically like a quick summary of some of the things I said before, right? Understand how you're working right now and specifically the choices that guide you. So again, mindset, the current one, understand the Agile one and how that would be different. Understand what might be getting in your way. So if you do value that target state, well, what might get in your way to getting there? What kind of resistance might there be? What kind of objection and so on? Identify one thing to try it on, whether it's one project and a pilot team or it is a portion of your work. Design your process and workflow around that. Make that really simple, okay? People are not going to remember process much, so make it incredibly simple and basically just get started. One mantra I like to give teams is, it has a lousy acronym, sorry. It's finish small, valuable, work together. So finish, small, valuable, work together. I don't care how you use it. I don't care the process. It does not have to have ceremonies. It does not have to look just like so. I could care less for your cycle time at this point. Just finish stuff together that's useful and take it from there, right? So reflect frequently. Excellent ideas in Scrum and in Kanban and in Safe and everything. Then take them on. But it's not about the mechanics. Make it your own, because everybody's is really different and should look different because we're not clones.
Exactly. And I want to zoom in just a little bit in that last comment. It's not about the mechanics, right? That's something, because some organizations start small. They do it sort of exactly what you just said, right? Mm-hmm. Try it with one thing. And then what they do is they start copy pasting the mechanics on other teams. And yeah. They somehow forget how this whole thing started, which is actually what you should be doing for the other teams as well in order to get them on that same path, right?
Yeah.
So the mechanics are not the most important thing.
Yes, and it's funny how, you know, in life we have so many examples of why it's not about the mechanics and that we cannot copy-paste them. There is no set of best practices for being a married person. There is no best practices for teaching students in school, anything. So why should we assume that work is like that? I mean, the Industrial Revolution is over. Let's move on.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was a thought that popped into my head because of the Industrial Revolution, where everybody was taught to do one thing and one thing only in a step of processes. And that's different now, especially if you're doing knowledge work.
Which is like most of us now, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And especially while we're building all those robots that are going to help us 50 years from now, as you mentioned before.
I hope they will help us. I'm not so sure about that, but that's a different podcast.
That's a different topic, maybe for a next podcast. Gil, thank you very much for joining us. It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you to everybody else for listening. Please leave us your feedback and see you next time. Thanks, Gil.
All right.